This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 19th of November, 1952. The title of this lecture is Attention, Part 1. This lecture is 67 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Arrow Productions.
Night lecture, November the 19th, 1952. The subject is attention. All right. I'm going to give you a subject which actually fits within brackets in any theory or any possible application that we have attained or probably will attain in Dianetics or Scientology, and which would have been very profitable as an independent study in the field of witchcraft, hypnotism, motion picture making, I don't know, advertising writing. In fact, any time where you would have life, you would have this subject. And no matter what kind of life you had, you would have this subject. And what do you know? This subject applies to both strata of before or above energy, that is, theta in its complete static condition, and applies to all the life forms and tells you why mist is mist. And that subject is very interesting. It's just a little package that sort of sits in the middle of everything, and though it apparently relates to what we are doing right this minute and is apparently very, very super something or other, connects up and tells you a lot of things and fits into this frame of reference, I want to give you an added proviso about it, and that is this one fits with anything. These soles go on any shoes. And if you think you need an anchor, unchanging, unvarying data, well, he's not going to shift around because of that Hubbard. He gets a new theory all the time and changes his mind, throws all his stuff away, and learned this, and so on, and spent hours doing that, and spent a long time processing people. All of a sudden, he comes out with this new stuff, and he says, all that stuff's old, and we'll... Fact of the matter is, it all still works right straight on up the line. We're just getting faster and faster. Well, anyway, if you need an anchor that'll hold, it's this one subject, attention. Attention. Now, because attention is directly intentional, and it is an implement of cause even before it becomes energy. And it's a way up the tone scale up here, way up. And way down, it's still attention. And if you were studying the span of life, it's all right to study life. There are giraffes, there are acacia trees, there are mice. When you get in, you say, let us study life. We can study life and its manifestations and behavior, life and its inter-effectiveness between forms, life and its interdependency of various forms. We can study life as impulses, life as this, life as that, life as the soul. We can study it in mysticism. We can study it all the way across, and we'd still be studying just one thing about it. We'd be studying attention. Attention is a very nice, happy little cue. You think you know now what I'm talking about when I say attention? And yet, to define it with great precision, define exactly what you mean by attention, would probably take you in through one of the most complicated labyrinths of channels into some of the most complex manifestations of energy, would take you into some of the most exalted, ecstatic, or very practical concepts. You could go in any direction from there. And so when I say attention, you think you know what I mean. I'm sure you know what I mean. Attention is something you pay. Now, there are more tricks can be done with attention and processing than any other subject we have. There's more effectiveness to be found in the field of responsibility. Well, there's tremendous stuff in responsibility and all that sort of thing, but attention, you can really do some strange tricks with attention in a process. You can shock people by using these processes. All right, you have to start out something like this with a definition. All right, I'm not going to find attention. It's attention. that's what it is, and that's all I'm going to define it as. Because if I adventured to define it any further than that, it might limit, somewhere along the line, its application. So let's just leave it at that. You know when you're alive and conscious that you have something called attention. And you know when other people are alive and conscious, they have something called attention. And you know that the attention can wander. And you know that you are sometimes incapable of commanding it. And you know that you've sometimes made other people fail in demanding it. And you have a spooky notion occasionally that it's sort of like, as you pass attention waves back and forth, it's sort of like absorbing life out of people. And you know that manifestation might be in there. In other words, it actually is true. Actually true. If you want to do this to somebody, if you're mean enough to make this experiment, and there's no reason why you shouldn't make this experiment, is take some poor, luckless Homo sapiens. By the way, he's doomed unless we do something for him anyway. He's sitting there in your office or in the home or something like this, and just sit there and find what it takes in you. It's very easy to find. You just sort of say it's there, and it's there. Find what it takes in you to pull all of his energy out of him. Not by mechanical tricks or talk or anything like that. Just sort of reach out, pull his energy out of him, and watch the boy. If you're fairly high in tone, you will just see this fellow start to droop. He'll just start to droop. Now, if you're fool enough to think this charges you up, what you're being charged up by is a postulate of your own, that is life energy, and it is charging you up. That's fine. You might as well make to yourself, I am now charged up, without going through any rigmarole. You know, most of these rigmaroles, which you read about in various cults and things like that, are very interesting, but they are directed only in one direction, and that is to fix the attention of the neophyte. Remember that. If you've got a very complicated aesthetic ritual, and right after the bearer of cups comes into the room in a purple robe, a great gong strikes, and at this moment, Aphrodite kneels before the altar, and a resounding curse sounds from the throne. I don't care how often or how much or anything else went on like this, on and on and on. They're only saying one thing. If you fix this fellow's attention, and if you get it fixed enough, and if it becomes just thoroughly fixed, you can all of a sudden say, you are now a full blood brother kangaroo, and say, help me, he'll hop. Now, so it doesn't matter much. Now, there's this. You can tell a person in rituals and things like that to fix his attention and not to let it wander. And if you tell him to fix his attention and then you tell him not to let it wander to something else, you split his attention. Like an alchemist can always make gold if on the 3rd of August, of any 3rd of August when there is a moon, he goes to the top of Pine Tree Hill and there pours the following ingredients into the following ingredients and heats them for 23 minutes at 20 degrees centigrade. And he'll have gold, providing he doesn't think of the word hippopotamus. Now, Now, that is a wonderful way. Now, very often in the old days, they put out medicine, perfectly good medicine, but you know how to make that medicine better. There's a way to make it better. And the way you make it better is you give a chant with it. And that fixes the person's attention on the fact that he's taking medicine. And, of course, he now knows he's taking medicine, and this medicine will make him better because of the chant, you see. And actually, if you could make a person do this while he was taking penicillin, you probably would find a greater, higher effective level of penicillin. If you said, "This penicillin which I am swilling will make me well if God is willing," or something like that. And with this injection, goodbye infection, something on that order. Anyway, I ran an AA out of a fellow one time, an attempted abortion out of a preacher one time, where his mother was giving the chant which went along with the stuff she was supposed to take in order to bring about the fait accompli. And she goes along with this silly chant, something about abracadabra and baby down the drain or something of the sort. And she finishes it up in an amusing tone of voice, says afterwards, "You know, I think it's the medicine. I don't think that chant does a bit of good." Well, now, you get the latitude of attention. Now, if you do a thorough enough job with attention, if you fix attention thoroughly enough, anything can happen. You can get flows along the line that'll do the darndest things. You can put intentions and communications along at a fixed attention line. And what do you think hypnotism is? All hypnotism is the trick of fixing in one place somebody's attention and fix it, and then fix it a little bit better, and then fix it a little bit better, and then you start to monitor the line which he has fixed. And all of a sudden, the line is so fixed that he finds it being monitored, and he cannot escape from it. So therefore, any somnolent rhythm which is put back across the line will re-echo throughout his whole being. And he's got to go with his rhythm, and he becomes an effect. That actually is hypnotism. Now, I don't care how you do it. You can do it by fixing a fellow's eye on an Archimedes spiral. You can do it by fixing his eye on a flame, a candle flame. You can do it by fixing his eye anyway. Or, what do you know? You can blindfold him and start fixing his attention on one nerve channel. Just one nerve channel. And if you kept at it long enough, he'd go, "Bong." You fixed his attention till you brought really all of his beingness in that direction. You're directing his attention. Now, just because one says directing, one doesn't say energy flow. Because you can get a creation of space, you see, and you can get a creation of space without any energy in it, and you could get a fellow's intention to be fixed in a certain area of space. With no energy flow, you would get attention. So we do not necessarily have to go into the laws of energy to see what's happening in attention. But in common practice, attention is connected with energy. In common practice. Not necessarily. It can be just an intention to have one's attention somewhere, and therefore one is located in a space. But you could actually get an energy. You could get it without an energy flow, but commonly, when we speak of attention, we are speaking of actual energy flows. And these actual flows are fascinating to behold. They become, as we talked about last class period, ARC. The characteristic, whether flow or ridge, the wavelength, that is to say where it is on the bands of wavelength, and direction of flow, which is agree, disagree. Now those factors combined make attention. And what do you think matter is? Matter is these three things being reduced in space and condensed in space until we have a thing, not a flow. And attention can exist very ably and very nicely down to the point where you get this flow. And what is no flow? You get this matter. What is matter? Matter, you speak of the messed universe as a chaotic universe. It is a universe of chaos. It's spoken of as chaos. It's often spoken of as having been born out of chaos. It was not born out of chaos. It was born out of order, which went into chaos. And what is chaos? You know what a force vector is? A force vector is you push 1 pound, 1 foot, and you get about so. That is 1 pound, 1 foot. Now we'll say that this distance from here to here is 1 pound, and it's traveling in this direction. So your vector gives you direction, and it gives you a representative or symbolical force. And not a symbolical force, it gives you symbolical weight, actually, in representation to length. So if we were graphing 1 foot pound going in this direction, we have then the complete definition of a force. So this is a force vector. And it's 1 foot, and it goes in that direction, and it is therefore a force vector. Now this is used very neatly. You don't have to, I know this is probably echoing in some of your minds, you went back to when you were in school, and then they drew this thing, and then they said there's this thing here, and then they said there's, well, then of course there would be this thing, and then there'd be that thing, and this is the resolution of forces. Now that's not what we're talking about. We don't care anything about the resolution of forces, really. All forces can be graphed. Oh, you can do wonderful things with these graphs and so forth. So let's remember being taught this and finding it incomprehensible, and then just throwing that facsimile out, and then looking back at this one line here, and we just find that we can graph a force in such a wise. It has a direction. It has a distance equivalent to its distance equivalent to its weight or mass, and that's a force vector. That's a graphic representation. But what do you know? This thing is not quite inactual. It's not quite a symbol. You take a flock of iron filings. A whole bunch of iron filings, we scatter them around and just this random iron filings, and all of a sudden we just have all these iron filings lying there, and we put a magnet down here, and we put that as its south pole, and we put that as its north pole, and we get these random iron filings will suddenly gather in a pattern line. Most of them will gather straight across here, and then they'll gather in pattern line. Almost solid pattern lines that come back here. See? In other words, they've actually formed vectors. They've scattered themselves around. They've arranged themselves in accordance with a flow of force. As the force flows. Now, let's have a low pressure area and a high pressure area. Now, we have a low pressure area in the atmosphere. See, we have very little over here and a whole lot of pressure over here, and there's no barrier in between them. And yet we just allow free force in the thing. And, of course, stuff was going to flow from this high pressure area over here into this low pressure area. And what happens to all the trees between the two? Let's say we have a whole bunch of little trees between the two. You're going to see these little trees all point in that direction. So they say the wind is going that away. Now the force itself is something as invisible as wind, but when you add matter to it, or when you add live energy into these patterns, we find this live energy is taking up a direction. It's taking up a direction. There is the force field around a wire. Here's a wire. It's 10 miles long. It doesn't matter how long this wire is. And we find out that the current is flowing this way. But there, if we put a bunch of iron filings, threw them into the air, we would get a circular field. We would see the field. The field is there all the time. It doesn't require the iron filings, but it's something like a black cat in a coal cellar at night, and we don't see anything, but there's a black cat in the coal cellar. We don't see anything until we turn a flashlight on. Well, throwing some matter into this field, like iron filings, shows you, all of a sudden, just like the flashlight would show the cat, shows you that there is a field. There's an actual action taking place around this wire. It's invisible, but there it is. And by the way, its direction of flux, the wire were flying, going in flow, going in this direction, the field would go this way. And if the flow were going back down that direction, your field would be going the opposite direction. It's very patterned. It very set. I mean, it's one of those things like, oh, well, that's the way it is. When you have a flow of energy, then you say you have an influence in the vicinity of the energy. An influence. Something which will be there if you put something there to show that it is there. There's an influence. Now, you could call this influence potential experience. You could say this is potential experience. It isn't actual experience because nothing is being done with this flow all the way down this wire. Nothing's happening with this flow. It's just this wire is flowing 10,000 volts and you see birds fly by it. Nothing happens. But if you were to go up to it and take a little basket full of iron filings and toss them up, you'd see as they went through that field, you'd see them do the darndest things. They go zzz. And they form up these various patterns in a field. Now, that happens with a magnet, and it happens with an electrical current. In fact, it happens with a radio wave. It happens with a radar wave. It happens any time you have currents. What's the finality of this thing? Well, if you put enough potential experiences around and threw enough energy into the field, it would generally start collecting more energy, just like it collects iron filings. For instance, these iron filings won't fall normally. Some of them will fall, but they'll just sort of go around in circles and then grip the wire. We'd have a condition which would eventually result in matter. These currents flow and energy accumulates, and energy accumulates, and particles accumulate, and motion accumulates, but it isn't accumulating in any kind of an orderly way. One time you dump iron filings from this direction, and the next time you dump them in from that direction, only the current's flowing some opposite way. And if those things continued to stay in suspension any way you put the wire and so on, you would eventually have quite a mass of stuff supported there. All right. You understand, then, that this vector line, this force vector, is representative of direction, and mass. That's can be many things, but they're all summed up in the word force. Force, you see, isn't just hitting somebody over the head with a hammer. Force is necessary to open a door, turn on a light switch, walk, talk, look, anything. These things have to be handled, directed, controlled energy. And your pre-clear is as good as he can handle direct control energy. And he's better if he can create, change, conserve, and destroy time, space, and energy. He's real good then. He's God. All right. Now, if we took that and reduced it to a microscopic size, this big force vector, and we kind of laid it around there, and then all of a sudden we oriented it, we'd have a whole bunch of little tiny force vectors. See, we'd be able to put an arrow on each one of these directed vectors. There'd be so many forces going in so many directions, and all this would add up, and and you get where all the forces were going. That's very orderly around those two magnets there. Very orderly. What's it look like in matter? If you put enough random vectors going in enough direction, you've got a piece of matter. You've got this vector, and you've got this vector, and you've got, mind you, at 360 degrees, not in two dimensions here, and this vector, and this vector, and that 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 vector. You get the idea? That's getting pretty confused, isn't it? Well, when that gets confused enough, you've got a chunk of something or other. It's all very pretty to look on the periodic chart and say one proton and one electron traveling in this way, in this direction, makes one hydrogen atom. And two electrons traveling around one, here we go. See. Now we get up to two protons and six electrons and 18 and... Boy, if anybody ever took off on a theory, they took off on a theory with that one, because nobody's ever seen one of these things yet. They have big cyclotrons. When I was a kid in school, I used to... Why, I took the awfulest drubbing in my life in a lecture room one day when I said, you know, it looks to me like that thing has got to have mass if it's going to travel in any direction. And the professor said, what nonsense is this? The electron has mass. He says, now, he said, there's some Germans have had that theory. Let me tell you, young man, the less you have to do with the stuff which we aren't teaching at the moment, the better off you're going to be. Because electrons do not, I repeat, do not have any mass. The basic theory of the atom bomb is the electron has mass. They finally changed their minds, and they will probably have them all changed again in a very short time. They will find when they build the double H bomb, Great Britain probably built a double H bomb. There's an H-bomb in the U.S. now. The U.S. had an atom bomb. Now somebody's got a bigger atom bomb. Then the U.S. has got a big H-bomb. Then somebody else got to build a bigger bomb. And the only trouble of them is they don't have enough unlucky breaks in these experiments. These things, I always said, should be tested out near the central government so they can be witnessed. Closely observed so the politician knows what he's doing. The closer the better. Of course, somebody can say, now he advocates the blowing up of governments. No, I don't. I advocate minimal production of atom bombs. I don't know anybody has passed any laws regarding this, and frankly, don't know why it is that when you as a Thetan say, there will now be an energy beam between me and, there is one. Now, I'm going to take one of those beams someday and put it under a microscope or something and inspect it more closely and find those protons. But the harder I look at these beams and the more I examine them, the more apparent it is that they don't break down to such patterns. And the more I examine matter, the more it just vaguely seems to me that it's just a super composite of beams with random chaotic force vectors. Now, if you were to take this mass of iron filings, and they occupy a certain space, and you all of a sudden went crunch and compressed the space and the filings, it would kind of look to me like if you did that, you'd have something more solid. And if you kept up this process, after all that we witness in nature seems to be undergoing this process. There's numerous physical laws on a very reasonable strata of physics, such as Boyle's law and so on, has to do with the compression of gases. If you compress a gas, it becomes a solid. I mean, it becomes a liquid. And if you compress a liquid hard enough, theoretically, it'll become a solid, but water is uncompressible. I beg your pardon, I didn't mean to introduce that one. Physics is an exact science. And we don't laugh at that. Another thing is solids always freeze. Liquids always freeze from the bottom up, and you get your liquids always do that. except water, but that... By the way, there's no reason for this at all. Why, water freezes from the top down, but everything else freezes from the bottom up. If your sea out here was made out of ammonia, it would freeze the opposite way, too. Fascinating, isn't it? But, of course, Boyle's Law covers all liquids, on exceptions. I've had a lot of fun with this stuff because it becomes quite contradictory. And anytime anybody makes didactic statements, even like I make, he's actually asking for it. He's got one foot on a path that sooner or later is going to become untreadable. It's sooner or later, anytime he makes a forthright statement about energy, not so much true about space, but when he makes a forthright statement about energy and its composition, he is already walking a path which sooner or later is going to be barred. Now, my idea is that you just keep on agreeing on this. You can do something natively that can be done, that's all. You do something that can be done. And your can-be-doneness, when you've agreed upon it hard enough, makes a fixation and concentration such that energy takes place. Right now, just for our use, and not because it's true, we are going to consider that matter is a chaos of vectors of energy, which has been entered into by numerous attentions having been addressed thereunto. It's a chaos of vectors. And the particular type of chaos that it is determines what kind of matter it is. In other words, there'd be one type of chaos, you might say, would be magnesium, and another type of chaos would be hydrogen. And another type of chaos, but let's just never quite get chaos out of our minds connected with matter itself. It's very cohesive within its own self. It obeys certain very definite laws and rules. It's very wonderful, but it is handleable and becomes take-apartable to the direct ratio and degree that your preclear is self-determinated. Well, let's not forget that one. Matter starts to become something else. And your very aberrated human being has already begun to become matter. He's too much energy compressed too chaotically in too little space. And as a net result, any time he tries to put his attention in any direction, his attention becomes chaotic. And in essence, this is aberration. Simple, isn't it? Well, continuing this dissertation on attention, you could almost say that matter was a condensation of the attention which had taken the form of space and energy and had become condensed by further attention. This circular explanation, see. I mean, matter would be an energy manifestation in a space, which it is, which is the space. And the energy and the matter are all formed by an intention or attention. Which do you want? An intention? Attention. Well, possibly intention would mean something without energy, and attention is probably popular supposed to be an intention accompanied by energy and direction in space. It's possible that you could divide these things that way. It more or less would. That's why this technique, it's so shocking that this technique works at all, is because it's a circular explanation. It starts one place, it winds up the other place, and could have fitted into Dianetics any place, because what you're doing is being very, very shifty about theta itself. You're speculating on what an energy, time, space producing zero intends and how it intends before it gets into space and energy form. And you're speculating out in a zero. And this is, as far as your frame of reference is concerned here, your attention. Now, somebody will come up to you once in a while and he say, well, that's all right about how you're surviving and all that sort of thing. I don't want to know that. I know all about that anyway. I know all about that anyway. I'm a deep student of, I read a book once, and I know all about that. And but what I want to know is why. Don't bother to put this person on an e-meter. This person's almost solid matter. The fellow doesn't even start to worry, I mean, get real anxious and real upset about why until he's practically solid matter. And then he gets real interested in why, because, of course, matter has no purpose. Matter is an effect. And what he's saying is why am I an effect instead of why? He's saying, why am I such an effect? There's got to be some reason for me to endure all of this being an effect. There must be some reason for it. And why am I? And he doesn't want to know why he's living so much. He wants to know why he's an effect. Well, you try to answer that question. If you gave him the straight answer, straight out of theta, he wouldn't be able to pick it up. You start picking up that answer along about 8 or 10 on the tone scale. It ceases to be a question. About 8 or 10 on the tone scale. It isn't that you merely become blind to it. It's so obvious. And yet you try and communicate it to a piece of solid matter, and you say to this solid matter, now the reason you exist is, did you ever sit around and try to talk to a pillow or a doll or a dog or something that was not sensibly communicating with you beyond perhaps a little emotional line? And you're talking to matter. It's very hard to talk to matter. It doesn't do any more good to talk to matter than it does to kick a lamppost that just barked your shins. All you get back for it is some bruised toes in addition to your shins. And this is always the action of matter. It's chaotic and undirected. And matter has minimal ability to locate anything in time and space, much less the ability to originate space. What's matter? Matter is the low end of self-determinism. Matter is placed. It doesn't place. The high end of self-determinism is it places. It isn't placed. You get the difference between the upper and level. And what's it do it with? And what's all this amount to? Attention. What do we say attention is? You're dealing with something now which can be described. And I can give you a process. I can give you half a dozen processes and will right here about what attention is. You'll all be perfectly satisfied. Actually, the reason why you're satisfied as to what attention is because you are attention. That being who has lost the ability to direct and select attention is lost. He's no longer a being. Aberration is the inability to direct and select attention. To fit attention to the needs in this universe, a peculiar case, this universe, one must always think of it as a peculiar case, always be very open-minded, always be willing to assume that if you and I started to agree that the basic unit of currency should be kangaroos, we could fix up a universe in which they would be, and we could make them very scarce, and we could coin them, and everything. But here's this problem in this universe, attention generally takes the form of energy. And this energy has three characteristics. And one of them is the characteristic of whether it's flowing, dispersing, or is in a ridge. And another one of them is, what is the distance estimated from node to node? In other words, wavelength, where is it on the tone band of energy band? Is it in supersonic? Is it in sonic? Is it down in the flow in the nerves of the body, which are about 10 feet per second? Where is this band? What is its speed? That is your next characteristic. And which direction is it going? Is it going away from source or back towards source, if you consider your pre-clear source? And what are you dealing with there? Characteristic, that is to say dispersing, flowing, ridge, that is affinity. An affinity is a gradient scale. And that gradient scale of affinity is called emotion. And your various emotions are characterized one after the other with whether or not we have a ridge, a flow, a dispersal, and how chaotic has the ridge, flow, or dispersal become. In other words, the solider it is, the more chaotic it is, the lower it is in the tone scale. That's simple. And the theoretical end of all this is matter. In other words, your person quite low on the tone scale, if he's also a person who develops considerable attention or attracts considerable attention, will develop more mass. His body itself will have more mass just by developing this. And if he gets way down the tone scale where this is utterly uncontrolled, well, you sort of have to dig him out with a single jack. And if he's way down the tone scale and he's holding on like mad, he has to have time, but he can't be because he doesn't have space. If he's gotten into that situation, take you hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of processing to get him out. It doesn't mean, really, that he's less intelligent, because the truth be told, that these brackets are more logical. They are terribly practically logical when you start getting down around, well, I don't know, 2 is pretty logical. 2, 2, 2, somewhere on the tone scale in there. Oh, guys are awful logical in there. Now, he's getting more and more solid, though. And if he kept on paying attention, getting attention back, and paying attention, getting attention back, the more chaos there is in the attention directed to him, and the more chaos and scatter there is in the attention he directs out, the more chaotic this becomes, the solider these ridges get. Because there's more chaos in the ridge, you see, more chaos of attention. And so there being chaos of attention in the ridge itself, when new attention hits the ridge, you get chaos. You eventually wind up with a terrific amount of chaos. It's matter. It's matter so solid that if you even bite it, so solid that you can bite it. You can actually turn somatics on in pre-clears. In other words, bring a ridge in so that they can feel their teeth go through them. And you can get one to discharge between two ridges so violently by holding these two ridges until you get a condenser effect. You just hold them and hold them and hold them and won't let them come together and won't let them flow and won't let them flow and won't, boom. They'll just smack. You get a lightning bolt between the two of them. It's fascinating. Condenser action. No, you can, by the way, have AC flow, DC flow. You can handle facsimiles to get any electrical manifestation that you want. Or you can just sit back and get the idea they're taking place, and they take place. And what do you know? They show up in an E-meter. Which is very fascinating material. What's this got to do with attention? It means that your individual is being subjected to two conditions as he becomes more aberrated. His attention is either getting more fixed, beyond optimum, fixed and he cannot unfix it, or dispersed and he cannot fix it. It's flying all over very chaotically and he can't fix it, or it is fixed so that he can't get it loose and let it get around. You could say that he is as free as he is free to fix and unfix his attention. He is as free as he is free to fix and unfix his attention. And of course, when you say aberration, you mean crooked line. That's very basically what aberration means. When you have a straight line of flow or a straight channel in a straight space, there is no aberration. This is the highest of high in sanity. No aberration. But when that line has to twist around and go around a couple of ridges and dive into a couple of flows and pass through a few dispersals and up the other side again, and the fellow says it's logical that it should go that way, he thinks it's logical it should go that way because his intention is to make it go straight. So naturally, if he had the intention of it going straight, it went straight, didn't it? Trouble is, it didn't. And he'd get these darn ridges parked in front of him and hanging on to him and around him and packed in. Or he's sitting in the middle of a complete blow-up. You know, he's dispersing like mad. He's dispersing so bad, really, that you could almost, this is not factual, but you could almost consider that if you held a handkerchief by its two corners, 2 or 3 feet from this person, on any corner from his body, you would see it flutter and stand out like a high wind was blowing on it. I mean, there's an actual terrific magnetic force flow going out from this person. That's not good. That's a dispersal. That's a dispersal, and this is very upsetting because this person is generally scared to death. And you move this person in this dispersal just a little bit so he can feel this flow start. Flow is anchored on ridges, of course. And he can't move out of it. And he feels the flow start. And he says, oh, I got to hold on. So he grabs the first ridge he can hold on to and sticks. Then he starts to let go of the ridge and so on. And if he's at that level, in that condition, he gets the sensation known as fear. And that's what fear is. A big dispersal. It's lots of energy going by one at all angles. You could actually take and rig up a little generator and sit here in the window that generated something even on one of the lower harmonics of the Thetans energy vibrations, or one of the lower harmonics of a ridge emanation, anything like that. You could just rig this thing up and put it there in the window, and people, as they passed in the street, would become terrified. This had to be used in the theater. You could throw this big horror scene on the stage and then throw the button. And it wouldn't matter what the actors did or said, the audience would attribute it to that, but actually it would be this blasting flow that would be going past them that gave them the sensation of fear. Also, they'd all leave. So you want to put it on strong enough so that they leave fast enough so they don't stop at the box office and ask for the money back. If you do this. They will flee from a dispersal, or they will flee from the unknown. Of course, they're just as likely to attack the unknown. Now, a ridge is actually a light version of matter. It's matter in formation. Well, you know, it has cohesion. The degree of cohesion of an area of space energy and the degree to which it would adhere to other areas of space energy has really everything to do with whether it's a flow, a dispersal, or a solid ridge. And what do you know? You have the cohesion-adhesion characteristic of matter showing up as emotion. So we have affinity as the cohesion and adhesion characteristic of energy. They're close enough in there. So think of adhesion. Well, let's take this chalk. Why does that chalk stay together? It stays together because it's cohesive. One of those highly unexplained words. It's just cohesive. It just sticks together in this area of space. Now, you get this through sympathy and through love and that sort of thing. You will get people in an affinity with each other. Sympathy is a very bad one. Now, this has actually, this material here has repulsions for certain other material. It's more attracted to itself than it is to others, and from others it's actually repulsed. So you have positive, negative, or other characteristics of energy, which we won't bother with. It's just some energy sticks to itself, and some energy sticks to other energy, and so on. We get all these various conditions. What do you know? We find this kind of thing existing on the emotional scale. You see, we have a 1-5 is pretty able to handle a 1-1. A 1-1 can handle a 1-5 very nicely, yet one is a dispersal and one is a ridge. The 1-1 is dispersing, and the 1-5 is generally sitting square on a ridge. We have those two going together very nicely. And the 1-5 is never satisfied unless he gets a person at 0.75, which is a lower level of flow. Well, you put another level of hold, rather, grief. The 1-5 is, well, let up. He'll stop beating somebody up if they cry, beg for mercy or something of the sort. If they propitiate or beg for mercy or sympathize with them, the 1-5 is a sucker for sympathy. Oh, how a 1-5 goes for sympathy. You can walk down the street here and see a 1-5. You can spot him very rapidly. Just walk down the street, spot a 1-5. You could probably go up to him and say, do you work very hard? You're in for an hour's dissertation on how hard he works. And so forth. Now, there's affinity as represented by the cohesion-adhesion characteristic of matter. You understand this is an analogy, this is a way of pointing it out, and becomes useful in processing, by the way. Now let's get over here on the next corner, and let's have wavelength. Electricity is up here someplace, and sound is down here someplace. It's in gradient scale of wavelength. A wavelength is the distance from the peak to the peak of the wave. Waves theoretically flow that way, and the wavelength is from that peak to that peak. Highly arbitrary. I don't know that waves even flow. I don't even know if they exist, but they're handy. And all the nuclear physicists say they exist, and the nuclear physicist must be right today because he's busy blowing the world up, isn't he? And so that makes him right. And so you've got this characteristic. And as we know, that characteristic is represented by communication on our ARC line. Now, that in energy would be both the pattern of the wave, whether it was double node or single node or sine wave or whatever else it was, or whether or not it was a noise wave. You consider a noise wave thing ugly. That would be a jagged wave that would go very jagged, a noise wave, big, small impulses, and so on. Now, what do we get there? We get sort of the quality and wavelength is what we're interested in, the quality and the wavelength. So we've got the quality and the wavelength there, and that tells you the communication band. And sure enough, as we sort through the body, as we look over the thing, we find out that one of our perceptions sees it one wavelength and another sees it another wavelength. For instance, sound is picking up this wavelength of sound, and that's very low on the tone band. Sight is, I don't know, I've forgotten what sight is. Let's see, it's about 0.4 zeros, somewhere around about 0.403, 2 centimeters. I think infrared, if I remember rightly, is 0.603, somewhere around in that band, centimeters. That's the distance. That tiny portion of a centimeter is the distance between the crest and the crest. You know what waves look like in the ocean. Well, if you measure the distance from the crest on a wavelength, this theoretical thing traveling along, why it would be that tiny. All right. Now we look this over. We find out then that communications depend on perception of all of these various ranges. Now, one person's hearing is very narrow. It goes from 35 as the low up to 1,000 vibrations per second. Maybe 35 to 1,000 vibrations per second is the total range of hearing of this person. Actually, it ought to be way, way, way up above that, and it ought to be a lot lower than that. But he's just in that band, and he isn't in there very well either. And it's what wavelength is a person willing to handle, which regulates what can the person perceive. This is the same thing. What wavelength is he willing to handle? What can he perceive? Same thing. Is he willing to handle very, very high waves? Well, most people are willing to handle a high electronic wave. And what do you know? That's the wave of sight. They're perfectly willing to handle high sight. They're less willing to handle sound. Sound's invisible. Thetans haven't been swimming around in air very long. They've only been here for a short time, and they don't know much about this sound. They'd much rather depend on sight. Your preclear almost always, if he can see it in the facsimile, clearly it's real to him. But if he can't see it clearly, no matter how much sonic was on it, he wouldn't believe it. That's because he isn't accustomed to treating sound as being valuable to him. All right, what's tactile? What's the wavelength of tactile? What's the wavelength of these other things? They're just various positions so that you could have arbitrarily taken all of possible wavelengths from point 3001 centimeters down to 10,000 feet between crests. You could just take all possible wavelengths and just pack this whole band up here all the way to the top in sections, and then call one, call this low band down here, 10,000 to 1,000. We'll call that a perception band. We'll say that's crumping. You crump. That means you perceive that. And then take this next band up here and say that is the G band. Wouldn't matter. You're so accustomed to hearing about eyes and sight and sound and this and that that it doesn't occur to you that you're actually not looking with your eyes anyway. You could look with your ears just as well as you could look with your eyes, because the central control post inside your head doesn't care what wave it perceives, but it will select out and perceive the wave it perceives. That's awfully simple. You have all of these very fancy rigs, all the eyes, optic nerves, all this stuff, ears, little hammers that ring, and other things, and you've got nerve lines. And where does it all wind up? It winds up on something that can emit energy and receive energy any place on the whole band, and that thing is a thetan. It's something like building these enormous structures out here and explaining how complicated they are, like alchemy. If you've ever studied alchemy, it just gets around to the fact that the lead and dross of man, we hope, can be refined into the gold of nobility. And that's one of the meanings. And then on the other side, that maybe we can turn lead into gold. But boy, can we travel all over the place to get in there. They didn't know how to do it. You wouldn't have any recording at all if you didn't have this central recorder, which is you. You see, you wouldn't have any recording at all if it wasn't for that central recorder. And it happens to be an all-band recorder. Selective, too. Fascinating. But here you are, sitting in the middle, not of a super selective channel board or anything that does anything for you at all. There you are, just sitting there, see? Automatically picking up low bands, the crump band, and the G band, and the tump band, and the brit band, and the yip band. I yip. I yipped him coming down the street. Well, it might be supersonic. You don't happen to have anything in the supersonic band because it's not very valuable here on this planet. But you can perceive in the supersonic band, I'm sure, if you just concentrate on it, and that you call that yipping. I yipped him. Instead of I saw him or something. And you do the same thing with yipping that you're doing with sight. You would simply get, there's a possible impression there, so you make an impression which matches that point in the tone band. That's all. It's actually terribly easy. You can just get buried underneath this stuff with the greatest of ease and completely miss the fact how simple it is. Let's say you have a radio, and you can hear on all bands with the radio, including what the people are saying next door, and including seeing who's at the front door, and including supersonics, what the fish are saying out at sea. And you could just get all these things, and they just come in these various waveforms. And you can analyze, you know what these waveforms are. Isn't it fascinating? I wonder if it's really necessary to have any waveforms at all. Completely aside, I wonder if they're there. As far as attention is concerned, though, your attention has been so demanded for so long by the messed universe, and that you do it in this fashion, boy, do you study alchemy when you go to perceive. You know, the messed universe, we take the third corner and its flow direction, and the messed universe has been flowing at you and flowing at you and flowing at you until you've got this limit of elasticity in all directions. And your preclear has simply lost the ability to differentiate tone level to tone level because he says, my ears are bad. He might as well say, my thetan is bad on that part of the tone band. He's liable to say, I will not take responsibility, or I cannot control, or my attention is already absorbed and fixed or unfixed on the subject of sound. Therefore, I can't hear and have no sonic. Now, all those things add up to the same thing, you see? And it all adds up to the fact that either I believe my attention has been poorly invested here, my attention is dispersed, or my attention is too fixed for me to perceive sound. That's all it's saying, you see? It's awfully simple. Now, you get this fabulous sort of thing. You get a fabulous idea of the complexities of perception if you want to read a text on the subject, which would cover all perceptions. Actually, wavelength is wavelength, and vibration length is vibration length. Wavelength is wavelength. Vibration length is vibration length. I don't care whether it is appearing in what medium or another medium. Now, a funny part of sound is you can't get these low-level vibrations. They don't travel well enough to go in a non-filled space. They wouldn't go in a vacuum. Sound won't go in a vacuum. It's very amusing. You can put a bell jar and exhaust all the air out and have a pistol in there, and you're standing right here, like close to the pistol, and fire the thing. You know you could hear a pistol that distance. Well, no, you can't, because the sound, you can see the pistol go off, but you don't hear the sound. The reason you don't hear the sound is because there isn't any air between you and the pistol. You've exhausted the air out. But that only means that particular wave band is too low to go through space. It only says it requires a medium for its transmission. It says you don't get a C wave, which is very long, unless you've got some water to put it in. It's as simple as that. And what do you know? Powder, you can make waves in powder, and powder will act as a transmission. You take arsenic that comes out of the mines up in, any of these big copper mines and so forth. They're liable to have their big arsenic cars. You know, a man can drown in arsenic powder. Horrible death. But you throw a brick or something into the arsenic, and We'll see the waves go out, just like dropping something in a pool. All it is a transmission medium. It's saying matter which is capable of plasticity. Air is matter. Air, very solidified, becomes very solid matter, believe me. But theoretically, you could take this very air and crush it down to a lump of matter, which, treated in certain ways, electronically, I mean, would probably adhese as matter. Now, evidently, you as people, as thetans, can make almost any kind of matter you can lay your mind to. By doing what? By getting an intention to do so and then fixing your attention on it. That's fascinating. So attention gets into all of these manifestations up and down the tone scale. Now, we don't have to explain it all by energy. But it's very nice to be able to do so, because in this universe you can measure energy. Measure it so nicely. And you can do other things with energy, and you can do things with space, and we've got these things all agreed on, and it's very handy. So for this universe, it's space and matter and energy, which has to do with attention. But in theta, you can just have an intention and you have attention. And attention, as I say, must be straight or clear. Get that? Must be clear. You must be able to make a straight postulate or clear postulate or clear flow in order to have the attention accomplish what you want it to accomplish. Okay, let's take a break.